Chapter 54. A puzzle. Mr. Clennam did not increase in favor with the father of the Marshalsea in the ratio of his increasing visits. His obtuseness on the great testimonial question was not calculated to awaken admiration in the paternal breast, but had rather a tendency to give offense in that sensitive quarter, and to be regarded as a positive shortcoming in point of gentlemanly feeling. An impression of disappointment, occasioned by the discovery that Mr. Clennam scarcely possessed that delicacy for which, in the confidence of his nature, he had been inclined to give him credit, began to darken the fatherly mind in connection with that gentleman. The father went so far as to say, in his private family circle, that he feared Mr. Clennam was not a man of high instincts. He was happy, he observed, in his public capacity as leader and representative of the college, to receive Mr. Clennam when he called to pay his respects, but he didn't find that he got on with him personally. There appeared to be something he didn't know what it was wanting in him. Howbeit, the father did not fail in any outward show of politeness, but, on the contrary, honored him with much attention. Perhaps cherishing the hope that, although not a man of a sufficiently brilliant and spontaneous turn of mind, to repeat his former testimonial unsolicited, it might still be within the compass of his nature to bear the part of a responsive gentleman in any correspondence that way tending. In the threefold capacity of the gentleman from outside who had been accidentally locked in on the night of his first appearance, of the gentleman from outside who had inquired into the affairs of the father of the Marshalsea with the stupendous idea of getting him out, and of the gentleman from outside who took an interest in the child of the Marshalsea, Clennam soon became a visitor of mark. He was not surprised by the attentions he received from Mr. Chivery when that officer was on the lock, for he made little distinction between Mr. Chivery's politeness and that of the other turnkeys. It was on one particular afternoon that Mr. Chivery surprised him all at once and stood forth from his companions in bold relief. Mr. Chivery, by some artful exercise of his power of clearing the lodge, had contrived to rid it of all sauntering collegians, so that Clennam, coming out of the prison, should find him on duty alone. Apostrophe, private, I ask your pardon, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery in a secret manner, but which way might you be going? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am going over the bridge. Apostrophe, he saw in Mr. Chivery, with some astonishment, quite an allegory of silence, as he stood with his key on his lips. Apostrophe, private, I ask your pardon again, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery, but could you go round by Horsemonger Lane? Could you by any means find time to look in at that address? Apostrophe, apostrophe, handing him a little card, printed for circulation among the connection of Chivery and Company. Tobacconists, importers of pure Havana cigars, Bengal cheroots, and fine-flavored Cubas, dealers in fancy snuffs, and C, apostrophe, private, and tobacco business, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery. The truth is, it's my wife. She's wishful to say a word to you, sir, upon the point respecting yes, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery, answering Clennam's look of apprehension with a nod, respecting her. Apostrophe, I will make a point of seeing your wife directly. Apostrophe, thank you, sir. Much obliged. And above 10 minutes out of your way. Please to ask for Mrs. Chivery. Apostrophe, these instructions, Mr. Chivery, who had already let him out, cautiously called through a little slide in the outer door, which he could draw back from within for the inspection of visitors when it pleased him. Arthur Clennam, with the card in his hand, betook himself to the address set forth upon it, and speedily arrived there. It was a very small establishment, wherein a decent woman sat behind the counter working at her needle. Little jars of tobacco, little boxes of cigars, a little assortment of pipes, a little jar or two of snuff, and a little instrument like a shoeing horn for serving it out, composed the retail stock in trade. Arthur mentioned his name, and his having promised to call, on the solicitation of Mr. Chivery, about something relating to Miss Dorrit, he believed. Mrs. Chivery at once laid aside her work, rose up from her seat behind the counter, and deploringly shook her head. "You may see him now," apostrophe said she, "if he will condescend to take a peep." Apostrophe, with these mysterious words, she preceded the visitor into a little parlor behind the shop, with a little window, in it commanding a very little dull backyard. In this yard a wash of sheets and tablecloths tried in vain, for want of air, to get itself dried on a line or two, and among those flapping articles was sitting in a chair, like the last mariner left alive on the deck of a damp ship without the power of furling the sails, a little woe-begone young man. "Our John," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery. Not to be deficient in interest, Clennam asked what he might be doing there. "It's the only change he takes," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery, shaking her head afresh. "He won't go out, even in the backyard, when there's no linen. But when there's linen, to keep the neighbor's eyes off, he'll sit there, hours. Hours he will. Says he feels as if it was groves." Apostrophe. Mrs. Chivery shook her head again, put her apron in a motherly way to her eyes, and reconducted her visitor into the regions of the business. "Please to take a seat, sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery. "Miss Dorrit is the matter with our John, sir. He's a breaking his heart for her, and I would wish to take the liberty to ask how it's to be made good to his parents when bust." Apostrophe. Mrs. Chivery, who was a comfortable-looking woman much respected about Horsemonger Lane for her feelings and her conversation, uttered this speech with fell composure, and immediately afterwards began again to shake her head and dry her eyes. "Sir," apostrophe said she in continuation, "you are acquainted with the family, and have interested yourself with the family, and are influential with the family. If you can promote views calculated to make two young people happy, let me, for our John's sake, and for both their sakes, implore you so to do." Apostrophe, "I have been so habituated," apostrophe returned Arthur, at a loss, "during the short time I have known her, to consider little I have been so habituated to consider Miss Dorrit in a light altogether removed from that in which you present her to me, that you quite take me by surprise. Does she know your son?" Apostrophe, "brought up together, sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery. "Played together." Apostrophe, "does she know your son as her admirer?" Apostrophe, "oh, bless you, sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery, with a sort of triumphant shiver, "she never could have seen him on a Sunday without knowing he was that. His cane alone would have told it long ago, if nothing else had. Young men like John don't take two ivory hands a-pinting, for nothing. How did I first know it myself? Similarly." Apostrophe, "perhaps Miss Dorrit may not be so ready as you see." Apostrophe, "then she knows it, sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery, "by word of mouth." Apostrophe, "are you sure?" Apostrophe, "sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery, "sure and certain as in this house I am. I see my son go out with my own eyes, when in this house I was, and I see my son come in with my own eyes, when in this house I was, and I know he done it." Apostrophe, Mrs. Chivery derived a surprising force of emphasis from the foregoing circumstantiality and repetition. "May I ask you, how he came to fall into the desponding state which causes you so much uneasiness?" Apostrophe, said Mrs. Chivery, "took place on that same day, when to this house I see that John with these eyes return. Never been himself in this house since. Never was like what he has been since, not from the hour, when to this house 7 year ago me and his father, as tenants by the quarter, came." Apostrophe, an effect in the nature of an affidavit, was gained from this speech by Mrs. Chivery's peculiar power of construction. "May I venture to inquire what is your version of the matter?" apostrophe apostrophe you may, apostrophe said Mrs. Chivery, and I will give it to you in honor and in word as true as in this shop I stand. Our John has everyone's good word and everyone's good wish. He played with her as a child, when in that yard a child she played. He has known her ever since. He went out upon the Sunday afternoon, when in this very parlor he had dined, and met her, with appointment or without appointment, which, I do not pretend to say. He made his offer to her. Her brother and sister is high in their views, and against our John. Her father is all for himself in his views, and against sharing her with anyone. Under which circumstances she has answered our John, no, John, I cannot have you, I cannot have any husband, it is not my intentions ever to become a wife, it is my intentions, to be always a sacrifice, farewell, find another worthy of you, and forget me. This is the way in which she is doomed to be a constant slave to them that are not worthy, that a constant slave she unto them should be. This is the way in which our John has come to find no pleasure, but in taking cold among the linen, and in showing in that yard, as in that yard I have myself shown you, a broken down ruin, that goes home to his mother's heart. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here the good woman pointed to the little window, whence her son might be seen sitting disconsolate in the tuneless groves. And again shook her head, and wiped her eyes, and besought him, for the united sakes of both the young people, to exercise his influence towards the bright reversal of these dismal events. She was so confident in her exposition of the case, and it was so undeniably founded on correct premises in so far as the relative positions of Little Dorrit and her family were concerned, that Clennam could not feel positive on the other side. He had come to attach to Little Dorrit an interest so peculiar an interest, that removed her from, while it grew out of, the common and coarse things surrounding her, that he found it disappointing, disagreeable, almost painful, to suppose her in love with young Mr. Chivery in the backyard, or any such person. On the other hand, he reasoned with himself, that she was just as good, and just as true in love with him, as not in love with him. And that to make a kind of domesticated fairy of her, on the penalty of isolation at heart from the only people she knew, would be but a weakness of his own fancy, and not a kind one. Still, her youthful and ethereal appearance, her timid manner, the charm of her sensitive voice and eyes, the very many respects in which she had interested him out of her own individuality, and the strong difference between herself and those about her, were not in unison, and were determined not to be in unison, with this newly presented idea. He told the worthy Mrs. Chivery, after turning these things over in his mind he did that, indeed, while she was yet speaking, that he might be relied upon to do his utmost at all times, to promote the happiness of Miss Dorrit, and to further the wishes of her heart, if it were in his power to do so, and if he could discover what they were. At the same time he cautioned her against assumptions and appearances. Enjoined strict silence and secrecy, lest Miss Dorrit should be made unhappy, and particularly advised her to endeavor to win her son's confidence, and so to make quite sure of the state of the case. Mrs. Chivery considered the latter precaution superfluous, but said she would try. She shook her head, as if she had not derived all the comfort she had fondly expected from this interview, but thanked him nevertheless for the trouble he had kindly taken. They then parted good friends, and Arthur walked away. The crowd in the street jostling the crowd in his mind, and the two crowds making a confusion, he avoided London Bridge, and turned off in the quieter direction of the Iron Bridge. He had scarcely set foot upon it, when he saw Little Dorrit walking on before him. It was a pleasant day, with a light breeze blowing, and she seemed to have that minute come there for air. He had left her in her father's room within an hour. It was a timely chance, favorable to his wish of observing her face and manner, when no one else was by. He quickened his pace, but before he reached her, she turned her head. "Have I startled you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked. I thought I knew the step, apostrophe, she answered, hesitating. And did you know it, Little Dorrit? You could hardly have expected mine. Apostrophe, I did not expect any. But when I heard a step, I thought it sounded like yours. Apostrophe, are you going further? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, sir, I am only walking her for a little change. Apostrophe, they walked together, and she recovered her confiding manner with him, and looked up in his face as she said, after glancing around. It is so strange. Perhaps you can hardly understand it. I sometimes have a sensation, as if it was almost unfeeling to walk here. Apostrophe, unfeeling? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to see the river, and so much sky, and so many objects, and such change and motion. Then to go back, you know, and find him in the same cramped place. Apostrophe, ah yes. But going back, you must remember that you take with you the spirit and influence of such things to cheer him. Apostrophe, do I? I hope I may. I am afraid you fancy too much, sir, and make me out too powerful. If you were in prison, could I bring such comfort to you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, Little Dorrit, I am sure of it. Apostrophe, he gathered from a tremor on her lip, and a passing shadow of great agitation on her face, that her mind was with her father. He remained silent for a few moments, that she might regain her composure. The Little Dorrit, trembling on his arm, was less in unison than ever with Mrs. Chivery's theory, and yet was not irreconcilable with a new fancy which sprung up within him, that there might be someone else in the hopeless newer fancy still in the hopeless unattainable distance. They turned, and Clennam said, "Here was Maggie coming." Little Dorrit looked up, surprised, and they confronted Maggie, who brought herself at sight of them to a dead stop. She had been trotting along, so preoccupied and busy, that she had not recognized them until they turned upon her. She was now in a moment, so conscience-stricken, that her very basket partook of the change. Maggie, you promised me to stop near father. Apostrophe, so I would, little mother, only he wouldn't let me. If he takes and sends me out I must go. If he takes and says, Maggie, you hurry away, and back with that letter, and you shall have a sixpence, if he answers a good un, I must take it. Lor, little mother, what's a poor thing of 10-year-old to do? And if Mr. Tip, if he happens to be a coming in as I come out, and if he says, where are you going, Maggie? And if I says, I'm a going so and so, and if... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.